Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies Market Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle, joined today by Megan Boxall. How are you doing, Megan?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Again? Yeah, you were here last week, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Oh, time is weird at the moment. It's the clocks, isn't it?
1 hour, it really throws you off.
Well, it does, in fact. We'll come back to that. And James Norrington, how are you doing, James?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. And you have written our tremendous cover feature this week on the fangs. And it's very timely indeed.
Very timely.
The reason I mention clocks is because we are recording a day early because of Easter and an hour later because of daylight savings. Is it an hour later?
But an hour earlier because it's 1 o'clock, not 2 o'clock.
Oh, God, it does my brain in. This is called sleep desynchronosis. And it apparently has an effect on stock markets.
Really? That's interesting.
Indeed. Motor accidents increase when clocks change.
Oh, dear.
People get all weird and sleepy and tetchy and emotional. And seriously, academically recorded phenomenon in relation to the stock markets. And the advice is just don't bother doing anything for the day after the clocks change.
That's really interesting.
Indeed. Wow. Indeed it is. Indeed it is. So we're all kind of struggling through a busy week, a shortened week, and suffering from clock changes. And also getting rather antsy at the state of the markets. And we'll be joined by Simon Thompson shortly. He's going to talk about some of his updates. But let's just crack straight in to the cover feature, which is Fear the Fangs. We've talked about the fangs quite a lot recently. There's been a lot going on, particularly around Facebook and the Cambridge Analytica scandal. But we've kind of taken this a step further because we're kind of worried about the broader repercussions of the tech sell-off. And that's continued at a pace today, hasn't it, Megan?
It really has, yeah. As I came down to the podcast studio, Netflix was down 6%. Facebook, Amazon, Google all down 5% and Apple down 3%. So people are not happy about the fangs today, and they haven't been for a few weeks. And yeah, that's what we explored in the feature this week, whether or not that sell-off can have wider implications on the whole market.
So let's talk about the kind of broader environment for fangs, just going quickly over again the kind of regulatory backdrop that's raising the concerns about what the future has in store for these companies.
Yeah, so it's an argument that isn't exactly new. People have been talking about the fact that these companies need to be regulated for a long time. Last year, the Yale Law Journal put out a review called the Amazon Antitrust Paradox, which was a really long piece about how Amazon needs to be regulated because it has managed to avoid current antitrust laws. It hasn't breached them, but it's just been able to grow at its current pace without really batting at the eyelids of the regulators. And it's become an enormous company.
And so how has it done this?
It's done it because its growth has been largely organic. So it hasn't. It's really, apart from Whole Foods last year, it's refrained from any mega mergers. It's grown into new markets, into different verticals. And it's dominated those markets. But because it's done them sensibly and not, it's not like been sudden. It's not like Amazon arrived yesterday via the creation of the merging of two huge companies. It's done it almost all on its own. And the current antitrust laws, they look after the consumer wallet rather than what Amazon's doing, the market dominance. So it has avoided the regulation that people are now saying it probably should have had a while ago.
And one of the reasons that you touched on in the feature and that is touched on in more detail in this report that you mentioned is that, in fact, from a consumer perspective, Amazon looks really good. It's you know, offered lower prices in many of the markets that it's entered.
Yeah, exactly. And it has been good. Like, everyone loves Amazon. Everyone uses Amazon.
Well, they don't love Amazon, but they use it.
Yeah. But then I know your argument is in the music business and how Amazon has sort of completely battered that industry. It's now,
well, in terms of the retailing of music, so the companies like HMV will, you know, Our Price, etc., no longer exist.
Yeah.
Essentially, it's certainly not in the way that they used to. There is an HMV still in Chelmsford.
Is there?
Yeah, it's really good. I really like it, but it's a different company than the one.
But it's true, isn't it? I went into a bookshop the other day on Cheapside. I haven't been into a bookshop for a while because I buy all my books on Amazon, and I had a really good time browsing through the books. And you think, oh, you haven't done this for a while because it is more unique now to find an actual physical store for books and music because Amazon has completely dominated that market. Now that they dominate it, there aren't really any competitors. They are starting to raise the price again of books and music and these industries that it controls.
Is this what they call predatory pricing then? So they basically come into a vertical, offer really low prices that attracts all of the customers. The high street rivals can't compete. And then once the rivals are gone, prices go up again.
Yeah, exactly.
And this is the big problem.
Yeah, and it seems that's what Amazon has done. But that still isn't really breaching antitrust laws at the as they stand at the moment, because consumers are still getting the best price from Amazon. So they're saying that maybe there needs to be a change in the way competition is regulated because of what Amazon's been able to do.
Bit late, but there you go. Never mind. So the concern around Amazon is that this is a huge company. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's incredibly powerful, but it's got a lot to live up to in terms of the valuation. And I guess this is the big worry around all of the FANGs at the moment, that the valuations being demanded of them, to varying degrees, suggests sort of perfect execution, growth, you know, almost ad infinitum.
Exactly.
Amazon in particular.
Amazon
in particular.
I think it's 193 times forward earnings at the moment. That's crazy. You're betting on so many years of profitable growth. And under the current regulation, yeah, maybe it could do that. But the concern here now is that if the regulation does change, and not only for Amazon, for Facebook and Google as well, they will not be able to sustain that growth that they have for the last few years. And those valuations will be completely ridiculous, and they're going to have to come down. And that is why we're starting to see the share prices of these companies, the biggest companies in the world, take a bit of a tumble.
Okay, so the other really expensive, Netflix is really expensive.
Yeah,
on a forward PE ratio.
Netflix has got a bit of a different issue, though. It's operating in a market which is already so competitive. And I mean, the valuation has become crazy. It's almost been swept up in this FANG mania. It is the end of the FANGs, and people are really excited by it. But actually, it's got a big challenge on its hands to sustain that growth, because it's competing with Amazon. It's competing with companies like Disney and Fox, and companies which have a really long track record of producing excellent films. And can it sustain it? It's going to have to spend an awful lot of money to compete with those companies, which are really cash profitable. And the argument is that it may not be able to do so.
So perhaps the worry around Netflix is not so much around regulation, but around competition.
Yeah.
That actually, having had this sort of first mover approach in terms of video streaming, big rivals with deep pockets are moving into that space and catching up fast.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is what the kind of problem is with looking at the FANGs as a whole. They all are facing very, very different problems. So Amazon's got the fact it may not be able to grow so fast, or as fast as its valuation suggests. Netflix has got competition, and Google and Facebook, they're facing this whole other problem around regulation of data, which has come to light since the Cambridge Analytica scandal in the last few weeks.
And in some respects, antitrust, traditional antitrust type concerns around their dominance of the advertising market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, Apple's an interesting one. You mentioned when we talked about the share price falls today, Apple seems to have fallen slightly less than the others. And I think this is quite interesting, because Apple is a, you know, it's in the FANGs, if you pronounce it in a rather unusual way, but it's a product company, really.
Yeah, it is a product company, and it does what it does very well. It has got competition, so it's not really going to be in that whole antitrust that has dominance in the market problem. It doesn't have really dominance in the market in terms of its products. There are so many other mobile phone companies. It's a different beast altogether.
Not valued anywhere near as aggressively as some of the other companies we're talking
about
either.
Not at all. It's actually quite cheap if you take the cash into account. So maybe Apple won't be facing the same problems as the others will, but its problem is the tax. It has managed to avoid paying taxes for a very long time, and that has...
Well, it has paid taxes, but perhaps not to the extent that some people would have liked it to, given its size and
the amount of profit it makes. Yeah, exactly. So if there is a change in the tax laws, which we've already seen in the US, and it does end up having to pay a bit more into government wallets, then it might not be as profitable in the future as it has been. And again, that would impact the valuation.
Okay, so let's move on, which is why James is here. So this was a joint effort, this feature, and you've looked at the concerns around growth and valuation, Megan. So not everybody, not all investors will hold these companies, certainly not in the UK. But many do, but certainly not all of them. James, we are worried that what's happening with the FANGs can have some knock-on effects for the market as a whole.
Well, it's particularly, so anybody who holds an S&P 500 tracker is going to have a 12% stake of that investment in the FANG stocks, because that's the proportion by market cap that they make up of the S&P 500 index. The issue that we've examined in the feature is to what extent active selling of FANG stocks could make passive investors, which, you know, if the S&P 500 index is dragged down as a sell-off of these large companies will do, if it could make passive investors exit the market via their ETFs, and then would then that have a feedback loop in more selling of stocks and systemic risk for the market.
Do you think investors really fully understand quite how much exposure they have to this very concentrated group of companies if they are indeed invested in, say, a US tracker?
Well, people will know that Apple's the largest company in the world, and they will know that obviously they're investing in a market capitalized weighted index. I think that possibly where people don't understand is we talk about sort of some of the stretched valuation multiples. And some of that is because people are betting on a lot of growth in the future, but some of it is purely because of their size, that in terms of inflows of passive investments, the stock prices of these larger companies are getting more expensive because, you know, they're the bigger companies get the higher allocation in a passive investment, and therefore the demand for their stock goes up. So there is a natural, or maybe an unnatural, support for their share price or increases multiples.
So in essence, what you're saying is they continue to be bought up just because they're big.
Because they're big, yeah, exactly.
And the problem is that could reverse. So our worry is that if they are sold down by active investors, passives will have to sell them as well. Or certainly there will be a kind of related effect in terms of the passive demand, and the same effect could work in reverse.
It's because these stocks are big enough to move the market if they're sold together, which is they're chucked in together under an acronym, FANG. If everyone says I'm selling out of tech, emotionally people remember the dot-com boom. If everybody sells out of tech stocks, they treat them all the same. They don't look at the differences in the business models as Megan's tried to outline they should. Then this will have an effect on markets, and the one thing that in passive investing in markets, people can hold markets the way they used to hold stocks, and they might sell out of markets. Now, that the potential is a feedback loop, and that hasn't come to pass yet, but it's a risk, and it's one that the passive industry hasn't really sort of answered, addressed.
Yeah, because we have been trying to get to the bottom of this. You know, what is the risk here with this kind of very concentrated exposure to these very large companies, and we haven't really got any really convincing answers. We've had some answers, but they seem to be, you know, essentially towing a party line.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of people are making a lot of money, from exchanges, from index providers, asset managers. It's not really in anybody's hasn't been anybody's interest to really question this with any great rigor.
But I would say it's certainly in all investors' interest to start asking these questions now. So really, what we are calling for is, Please give us some explanation about the kind of what in some respects is almost like a black box.
It is. I mean, the providers will rightly point to ETF providers will rightly point to the fact that a lot of the trading, the volumes that go into ETFs are done on the secondary market in ETF shares. So it's only when ETF shares are retired or new ETF shares are created that there's underlying trading in the security. So on a day-to-day basis, it can be overstated the effect it has on prices of it, on volatility of individual stocks, stock pricing. But what it does, undeniably, a lot of capital is tied up in the underlying funds now, and that will affect the free float of what's available, and that in turn will affect the demand to buy and sell shares, which has an impact on their price in the long term.
So we've got a figure here. The combined market capitalization of just the five FANG stocks is $3 trillion. Mm. I mean, that's a huge number.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got a lot of other tech companies which account for another significant proportion of the index.
And they're the companies which are also facing the same sort of regulatory backlash as these five FANG stocks are.
So who are
Twitter
about?
And Snapchat and Dropbox listed last week and did very well. But it's the same problems that they're looking at. We need to be protecting people's data better. So can these valuations be sustained? Maybe not.
Yeah, and of course you've got Tesla as well, which is sold off today, I understand, as well. Tesla, which is in the FANG Plus, NYSE FANG Plus Index. I think it's the CME that have put that together. Mm-hmm. Who else you've got in there? I can't remember.
Microsoft is sometimes bundled in there too. And that's another one which is relying a lot on its data services at the moment. It that's the most profitable part of its business, in the same way that Amazon's profitable part of its business is its web services. There's a lot of these companies valuing data.
Microsoft is an interesting company to talk about in this context because it has been through this in terms of the regulatory backlash before.
It's quite a nice example of a company that has gone through that what the company is going through now and has come out the other side and is still an incredibly impressive business. So actually there's the argument for if the market does fall or the FANG market falls as a whole, there might be an opportunity for sensible stock pickers to take the ones that they like out of those five FANG stocks or however many there are in the FANG Plus. And for that, we do look at Apple and think, yeah, it's a slightly different company. It's a product business. It's a quality company. It makes a huge amount of cash. So maybe if the markets do start to tumble, Apple, an opportunity to pick up Apple on the cheap would be there.
Indeed. So we are fairly circumspect in how we're approaching this.
Yeah, but it is definitely a worry. I mean, if you are going to be sensationalist, you could definitely make a big story out of this. I got very carried away writing this. James had to calm me down.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
It's emotional, especially on a Monday after the clocks have changed. Okay, interesting. Let's quickly, Megan, talk about some of the results and news that have cropped up this week. Not least today's news that Shire is on the end of a takeover approach.
Yes, it's interesting. People have been talking about Shire being a takeover target for a long time because it has done very, very badly in the last few years. Share prices tanked. But Takeda, which is the Japanese company which has suggested it has been interested in Shire's assets, is a bit of a surprise. Takeda has avoided mega mergers. It's a very conservative company. It grows mainly through organic means. Shire is the exact opposite to that. It made this massive takeover last year. It's still trying to integrate that. It's still trying to integrate takeovers it's done in the past.
Yeah, it's Baxalta.
Yeah, Baxalta was the one it made last year and it spent $32 billion on it. And that's why investors are really worried, because it had to take out a load of debt. The integration isn't going as smoothly as they expected. And Shire is a bulk up through mega merger kind of company, and Takeda is not that. So people are saying don't get too excited about it, because actually, it looks like this deal may not come off, but
the shares
price.
People have got quite excited.
It was up about
20%. Someone tried to buy Shire before, haven't they? It was AbbVie a few years back.
Yeah. And
it came to nothing.
It came to nothing. That was at a time where there were quite a lot of pharma mergers going on, and some came off and some didn't. But it's the same sort of thing happening now. I mean, we've seen GSK this week buy the rest of its joint venture from Novartis. Pfizer is trying to sell part of its business. There's lots of M&A going on in big pharma at the moment.
And actually, I saw an analysis of this trend towards consolidation in pharmaceuticals as actually relating back to the techies as well. Amazon is getting involved in healthcare, and people are suggesting that this is something to do with this wave of consolidation we're now seeing.
Yeah, so people are panicking about the Amazon effect, because everyone always panics about the Amazon effect. But in healthcare, when it joined up with Warren Buffett and JP Morgan last year to provide potential healthcare services only to its own employers, but it was sort of seen as a platform that Amazon could eventually get into healthcare. There's been all sorts of speculation that companies need to stack up to take on Amazon if it does ever make a big move into healthcare. CVS and Aetna, which are an insurance and a drugs delivery company in the US, they're in the process of merging as well. It all comes back to Amazon.
You're going to be busy doing the takeover page, which you look after, as well as the podcasts. There has been quite a lot of activity coming through there.
Yes, there has.
Extremely exciting. Extremely exciting. Let's quickly look at the results before we go over to Simon Thompson. There's one in particular I wanted to talk about, which was YouGov, which kind of nicely ties in the personal data angle that we've been discussing with Facebook. YouGov deals in personal data.
Yeah.
But isn't suffering the same degree of scepticism towards its business model that these very large companies have, because it's doing it in a slightly different way.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we said this last week, YouGov doesn't pretend that it doesn't make money from data. That's exactly what its business model is. And I spoke to a chief executive this week, and he said, actually, the clampdown on data protection is a massive opportunity for us, because we look after people's data properly. The bigger the regulatory environment, the more value there is in personal data. And YouGov has got so much data, and it's an incredibly valuable company because of that. And the growth potential is huge. I really like YouGov. I really like the opportunity that it has. Its margins are expanding enormously because it's doing a lot more in advertising, in making people's brand awareness better. It's almost taking on advertising agencies in that respect as well. It's almost like a new version of an ad agency.
Well, you've written about those recently. Some of the
They're really struggling.
They're struggling.
Yeah, yeah, and it is because companies like YouGov are just they're better. They're more modern. YouGov won a contract recently that used to be owned by Kantar, which is a WPP company, because YouGov's brand index, where it gets people to rate how how valuable they see different brands, is a better model, and it's got more data, and it just provides customers with a better service.
Can't believe no one's bought it yet.
What, YouGov?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think it's a prime takeover target, and it's not even that expensive.
Well, you say that.
Well, not for a tech company.
25 times forecast earnings. Mm. That kind of puts it in the same category of valuation as, say, Facebook.
Yeah, I suppose so.
But I guess there's fewer question marks over the growth potential here.
Yeah. No, I'm a fan of YouGov. We've got it on a buy tip.
Okay, fantastic. Shall we head over to the shores of Kent? Hello, Simon. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Incredibly busy like yourself, John. I've covered, I think, 6 results in the magazine this week. Working on another 12 for Tuesday and Wednesday next week. I've just come off the phone to 2 companies that I'm going to be writing up for Tuesday. Incredibly interesting companies. So that's something to look out for. But for this week, there's 2 companies I'd like to focus on. One of which is, we've talked about this before, Satellite Solutions Worldwide.
Mm.
It's a satellite internet service provider. It's actually now the 4th largest independent one in the world. It's been building up with acquisitions, 18 bolt-on acquisitions in the last 2.5 years, cost about £33 million cash for those. At acquisition, it brought in about 79,000 customers. Its customer base now is 100,000, so that gives you some idea of the organic growth. Last year, it generated like-for-like sales of just under 13%. I grilled the directors, Andrew Walwyn, chief executive, and Frank Waters, finance director, and they're maintaining that growth into this year. It's basically increased its cash profits. It quadrupled them last year, 4.6 million cash profits, sales about £44 million. But what's really interesting at the moment is that it's just signed this deal with a joint venture with the European... it's just signed a deal for a joint venture between Viasat, which is a 3.6 billion company, to basically roll out a retail consumer broadband business across Europe. And they've chosen Satellite Solutions Worldwide as their reseller to actually do this. The company will provide sales, installation, billing, customer care, and logistics, whereas the joint venture will cover all the marketing supports, network capacity, the equipment, which is, you know, 600 to 800 euros for the equipment alone. And what this is going to enable Satellite Solutions Worldwide to do is actually grow much faster and into new markets that previously it would have been impossible to actually enter. It's already started up operations with this joint venture in Poland and Norway. It's about to roll out into Spain, and I've just been looking at Ofcom statistics for Spain. They've got 500,000 homes there with download speeds of less than 10 megabytes per second, 2.2 million with speeds between 10 megabytes and 30 megabytes per second. Well, this joint venture is going to offer these people 50 megabytes per second speed at very competitive prices as well. And as I said, it's going to cover all the startup costs. The margin that Satellite Solutions, I got this from the finance director, is going to make on these sales for this joint venture is 25%. Its normal margin is 35% gross margin. But the point is that they think, both directors, that the business that's going to be generated from this joint venture is going to lift their subscriber base from 100,000 to 125,000 over the next couple of years. Factor in like-for-like growth and the existing subscriber base, and you're looking at a company that could have realistically 150,000 subscribers within 2 years. And given the operational gearing of the business, and I've been crunching through the numbers again with the finance director on this, a business that's making cash profits of £4.6 million and £44 million worth of sales for the year just ended could actually double its cash profits by 2020 on just a £19 million increase in sales.
So where does this sort of sit in the telecoms landscape? So, you know, most of us have our broadband provided by, you know, just kind of either an incumbent like BT or a challenger like Sky. Who is it selling to?
It sells to businesses, for starters, who want a decent connection at a decent speed. It's got Broadband UK, which is the government's... Quango that basically tries to improve broadband connections for the whole of the UK. So it feeds into those for local authorities, but also private individuals. So if you're, you know, out in Cornwall or in certain parts of Scotland where, you know, fixed broadband broadband connection is rather either slow or non-existent, this is ideal. And it's not that expensive. I mean, you know, their average revenue per user is just over £40. They're making a 35% gross margin on that.
£40 per month? Must
be. £3 to £3.50 a month. Sorry, start again. Their average revenue per user is £42 per month, £500 per year. They make a 35% gross margin off that. It may seem expensive, but if you don't have much choice for your broadband, that's actually quite a good deal.
Doesn't seem that expensive to me. I'm a BT customer.
Well, I pay. I mean, to give you some idea, just for Infinity for BT, I pay £31 a month. So if someone's going to guarantee even quicker internet connection, no disruption to my service, I'd quite happily pay the extra £10. The other thing is that the acquisitions they've been making, I went through with the finance director on this quite closely. They made 7 last year. They contributed about £800,000 of cash profits. For this year, they're expecting £1.7 million worth of cash profits. They only paid £8.5 million for those 7 acquisitions, so that's a multiple of 5 times cash profits within a year. So they've actually got a decent track record of buying acquisitions well, taking costs out, moving customers over to their platform, which actually has been tested to take on 1 million customers, by the way. So for the joint venture, there's no issues about capacity in terms of their billing systems. But you can easily see how cash profits for this business can build up very, very quickly. And, I mean, the directors were very positive. I put the readers in a couple of years ago, 5.5p. The share price now is about 8.5p. I feel an enterprise value to cash profit multiple of 10 times is fair. That suggests about 30% share price upside.
Okay. No, it sounds like a very, very interesting story. What was the second company you wanted to talk about, Simon?
I had Dr. Stephen Powell, Chief Executive of AIM Traded Cambridge Cognitions. We've talked about this one before. It's a company that's developed a suite of computer-based cognitive assessments to improve the understanding and diagnosis of psychological diseases like Alzheimer's, depression, schizophrenia. I had him on the phone from the east coast of the US at about 4 o'clock in the morning, his time, I think it was. It was well worth making the call. Two things about this. It reported a very small loss in the 2017 financial year. That was only because 2 contracts were delayed, pushed back into this year. Those contracts were worth £2.3 million. Well, the first thing is that the first one has just started. They had an announcement the day after the results. But the other thing is the sales pipeline, the sales order pipeline, was up by about 58% year on year. And according to Dr. Powell, is worth a multiple of FinCap's current year revenue forecast of £7.9 million. He says it's never, ever been stronger than it is at the moment. And looking at how revenues are going to build this year, it did about £6.7 million sterling revenues in 2017. Well, it's got this collaboration with US-based Takeda Pharmaceuticals, under which it monitors and assesses cognitive function in patients with depression using an iWatch. Well, that collaboration generated sales of £590,000 out of that £6.7 million in 2017. And Dr. Powell can see it doubling year on year.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's a fascinating trend, the kind of tech-enabled delivery of healthcare and drug development. So it's certainly something that we've touched on before. Definitely be keeping an eye on that one. Thank you, Simon. I know you're incredibly busy, so I'll let you get back to the word processor, and we'll speak again next week.
Well, and you have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too, Simon. Thank you very much.
Okay, cheers.
Okay, so lots more in the magazine this week. We've only touched on a very, very small segment of it. The secondary feature has been written by Philip Bryland, and it's about measuring portfolio performance. It's something that, you know, it seems obvious, but actually the techniques for doing it are often forgotten. So definitely worth a look there. Lots and lots of results. We're kind of winding down a bit now, thank goodness, as we go into Easter. But still 13 pages of results there, and probably a few more next week to come as well, before we can put our feet up, as it were. And lots there that both Simon and the company's team have covered. A stock screen from Algie Hall, a sector focus on the logistics space. Lots in the personal finance and funds section that they'll be talking about on their podcast, which I think they record tomorrow, given the short week. All the usual comment, including a final look at the GKN takeover before that gets decided tomorrow, I think the deadline is. So after the magazine has gone to press, but before it comes out usefully, we'll know what's happened there. The government has staged a last minute intervention, but it's a fascinating story that Paul Jackson has looked at in his No Free Lunch column. As I say, lots more in the news section, worth a look at. And yeah, thank you, James. Thank you, Megan. And of course, thank you, Simon. And we will be back again next week. Have a great Easter. In the meantime, pick up Fear the Fangs, available in all good news agents, or get on the website and subscribe. Speak soon.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.